Hi everyone, we are back with another episode of Spanish History 101 brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. This is episode 19, the 11th century, and the fight for control of the Iberian Peninsula goes on. We will continue to focus on the struggling that persisted in different parts of Spain, struggling against the Moors or the Muslims, and struggling and feuding amongst the different kingdoms. It's just ongoing. As I was saying, we are in the 11th century and things are changing quickly and getting pretty messy too. The Caliphate of Cordoba, one of the cultural and scientific centers of Europe at the time, is suffering from a great deal of instability. The great and feared leader Almanzor died in 1001 and there was no one to follow up. In fact, by 1009, the Caliphate collapsed into a civil war, which resulted in the disappearance or the end of the Umayyad dynasty in 1031. It is during this 30-year period that the caliphate begins to break up into all sorts of small territories called taifas, which are sort of like principalities. That means they essentially secede from the caliphate and become independent states. The taifas are generally associated with a certain regional ruling family. Some of the territories are as big as a Spanish province today, like Toledo or Zaragoza, while others are tiny postage stamps, as they say. This doesn't mean that they have lost their cultural wealth. There's still plenty of it around, but they lack the unity. And that lack of unity weakens and thwarts any coordinated effort to take on the Christian kingdoms. The Christian kingdoms were hardly any better. In certain ways, León was still the main region, probably, though constant infighting made things somewhat complicated there. All the same, León reached the height of its splendor and power under Fernando I the Great, who ruled from 1037 to 1065. He was also the Count of Castile, which had enjoyed its own home rule since 932, but was closely linked to León throughout these years. Castile was on the rise. This is important for our purposes because Castile will come to represent in many ways Spanish national identity and become almost synonymous with the idea of Spain. It's misleading, obviously, because there are lots of other important kingdoms and independent states and different cultures, but that's the idea. As we've mentioned in other episodes, Castile got its start in a region which is now present-day Burgos, a province about 200 kilometers or 120 miles north of Madrid. The city of Burgos is beautiful and rich with history and heritage, but Castile itself got its start somewhat outside of the city. It slowly began to expand as a county, which is why its first leaders were called counts, not kings. If the name Castile reminds you of the word castle, it isn't just you. Castile, or Castilla in Spanish, is said to mean the land of the castles. We will be talking more and more about this land in future episodes. Galicia continued to exist as an independent kingdom in an off-and-on manner. It sort of depended on who was ruling in the other parts. And then you had the Kingdom of Pamplona, which had grown to its maximum size. It was never huge, but it covered basically modern Navarra and the Basque Country and parts of southern France. Aragon was beginning to get started and on the verge of blooming. In fact, its first king, Ramiro I, took the throne in 1035. But it still was sort of a low-key kingdom at the time. Went on its way up. And then over in the northeast, you had Catalonia, which was known as the Catalan counties for the most part. They began to develop. We haven't talked much about this area, but it would slowly become an essential part of Spain's history. up until now, in the 9th and 10th centuries, it was comprised of a group of counties, these Catalan counties I was telling you about, who swore allegiance to the kings of the Franks, like Charlemagne. Essentially, they were subjects of those kings. Then, starting in 988, the Count of Barcelona, Borrell II, kind of stopped recognizing the Frankish kings as their superiors, and this is often considered to be the moment when Catalonia became an independent state, though there wasn't much left of it, as Almanzor had wreaked havoc on the territory, destroying Barcelona and leaving things somewhat in shambles. For the next 100 years or so, Catalonia struggled to organize itself due to all sorts of infighting, but they did manage to push out the remainder of the Muslims by 1117. Now, back to León, where things were decidedly more complicated, if that's possible. When Fernando I died, Castile became its own kingdom for the first time. We are talking about 1065. Yes, that's a year before William the Conqueror defeated King Harold at the Battle of Hastings. Why did this kingdom start? Well, instead of passing on a single throne to one of his three sons, Fernando did something which may have sounded egalitarian on paper, it may have sounded even like a good idea, but it was actually a recipe for disaster given the times. He gave a kingdom to each one. The eldest, Sancho, got the newly founded Castile. Alfonso was handed León, and the youngest, Garcia, was granted Galicia. And the minute Fernando passed away, the kids scrambled for power. Sancho reckoned that he had been given the short end of the stick and challenged his brother Alfonso to a battle, with the winner taking the other's kingdom. Alfonso accepted, and he lost in the battle, but he didn't honor his end of the bet. So the two got together and took Galicia away from their brother Garcia, who was imprisoned. And then Sancho, with the help of another legendary figure in medieval Spanish history, El Cid, invaded León and ousted Alfonso. El Cid, known more formally as Rodrigo Díaz de Vivar, was a natural maverick and the epitome of the sort of stud-like knight in shining armor. He also personified the madness of those times, as he sometimes fought on the side of the Christian forces against the Muslim forces, and he sometimes fought on the side of the Christian forces against other Christian forces, and then sometimes he fought on the side of the Muslim forces against the Christian forces, or even other Muslim forces. Now, what may seem like treasonous behavior to many, and from a modern standpoint it would be almost incomprehensible, was sort of merely the order of the day back then. And it certainly helps to explain why it took so long for the Moors to finally be expelled from the peninsula. I'll tell you more about him on a different day, but he was a fascinating historical person. Anyway, Sancho, who had gotten rid of Alfonso, was assassinated not long after that in 1072, and Alfonso returned to become Alfonso VI, the king of all three kingdoms, now that the other two brothers had gone. Now, once he had consolidated his power, Alfonso VI would reign for another 35 years, during which he focused much of his efforts on pushing back the Muslims, who, as we were saying, were now sort of an assembly of regions known as taifas. And for a little while there, it looked as if it was going to be a fairly easy thing for him to do. After all, even though the taifas continued to be strong culturally and scientifically and artistically, it was their disunion that favored the Christian cause. Such was the case that now the Christian kingdoms were demanding annual payment in exchange for peace. In other words, instead of getting rid of the Muslims, it was in the Christians' interest to make some money off of this. And this was actually what the caliph used to do to the Christian kingdoms when the caliphate was strong about 100 years before that. This payment was known as a pariah. The creation of the taifas was only one part of the problem for the Muslims. Another was alcohol. Muslim princes and rulers were becoming more and more lax about following Islam and Islamic law, and they were growing quite fond of Spanish wine, which was prohibited. But on the other side of the Mediterranean, in North Africa, a new force, more fundamentalist than the previous Umayyads, took an interest in Al-Andalus, partly because they were outraged by the sacrilegious behavior, and partly because they saw an opportunity to expand their empire, their possessions, their territories. They were known as the Almoravids, and they were Berbers from Morocco. They were a fearsome bunch, and they entered Spain in 1086 by request of many of the rulers from the taifas. Basically, these taifas were hoping to unite Al-Andalus once again, not only to defend themselves against the Christian kingdoms, but quite possibly to push them back and expand once again. The Almoravids were led by a man named Yusuf ibn Tashfin. And in a sense, this was the second major invasion of Muslims. As usual, they met initial success and left many of the Christian armies in tatters. That year, they took on the Leonese and Castilian forces led by Alfonso VI and thoroughly defeated them at the Battle of Sagrajas, which was in the province of Badajoz. Yusuf couldn't finish off the enemy because of his own losses, and he was also having some problems back in North Africa, so he had to go back and deal with that. But this did help Al-Andalus to stabilize temporarily, and León and Castile were forced to lick their wounds and regroup for many years. The next clash would be in Consuegra in the province of Toledo, and that too resulted in a loss for Alfonso VI. It was followed by another defeat at the Battle of Ucles in 1106, that's just east of Madrid, about 60 miles east, 100 kilometers. A pretty town, by the way. This last battle was where Alfonso's son and heir to the throne, Sancho — there are lots of Sanchos and Alfonsos in this story, so don't panic — so his daughter, Urraca — there are also lots of Urracas, but this is probably the most famous one — would eventually succeed him. Now, Urraca would marry King Alfonso I of Aragon, known as El Batallador, which is like the battlefield expert or the warrior. And they had a tumultuous marriage. I wouldn't say they were ever madly in love, and they were more interested in other ambitious goals. Urraca had to stave off many of Alfonso's political and military advances, and much more than his romantic ones. But we'll get to Aragon, Urraca, Castile, and León, and more adventures of this crazy period a little bit later. Don't forget the Moors too, because we haven't heard the last of them yet. But we'll stop there. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us with any comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Castos, and Apple. If you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, click on our PayPal donate button. Or if you wish to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts, you can check us out at Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.